Good afternoon again, friends. And thank you so much for the invitation to be with you today and for your generosity. One thing I've learned from living and working with Native peoples is to be attentive to place, to the earth beneath our feet, to all the living beings that surround us, and to the humans whose stories are embedded in the land. That's why we began by acknowledging the indigenous nations, their history on this land, and their continuing presence here today. Native peoples are asking churches and civic organizations around the country to open our services and meetings with acknowledgments like this. It's a way for us to recognize the Native peoples who live here today and remember those whose ancestors lived and died here. Right here. We can connect with them through the land. When I give talks and workshops, I ask people to think about our country's history of genocide and colonization, which we don't think about very much, and our schools don't teach very much, and our government never acknowledges. I ask people to think about what happened here, and then think about the Native people in our own communities today and consider what we might do to develop relationships now based on truth and respect and justice and our shared humanity. Many people say, but I don't know any Native Americans. This might be true, or it might not be. Native people are not always recognizable in stereotypic ways. But what is true is that many of us don't feel any connection with indigenous peoples. That makes it hard to imagine what it would mean to work toward right relationship with them. I think the land is our connective tissue. Most of us are connected to land somewhere, the land where we live today, the land of our ancestors, the land where we were born, the land where we vacation, the land we love for whatever reason. On this continent, all the land we know and love was known and loved first by indigenous peoples. And indigenous peoples say, the land remembers. If the land we love could tell us what it remembers, what would it say? When I asked myself this question, I started by thinking about the land where my German ancestors settled in the 1840s. They bought land in Michigan Territory and founded a German Lutheran town they called Frankenmuth, the courage of the Franconians. The fertile land of central Michigan had supported a very large Native population until it was wrested from them by the Treaty of Saginaw a couple decades before my ancestors arrived. The territorial governor, Lewis Cass, promised the Chippewas that they could remain on small tracts of land in Michigan forever. But then Cass became Secretary of War under President Andrew Jackson, and he was put in charge of enforcing the 1830 Indian Removal Act. He broke his promise to the Chippewas and forced most of them to move west. Some of their land became my family's farm. It lies along the Cass River, which was named after Lewis Cass, the primary agent of Indian removal. This is the land where I played with my cousins during summer vacations and where my cousins still live today. My parents and my cousins didn't learn this history in the Frankenmuth schools. My father and I learned it together by searching the internet for a couple of hours. What does this history mean for my family? What does it mean to the Chippewas, expelled from Michigan and spread out now across the Dakotas? I don't have clear answers to these questions, but I know that the land remembers. And I know that somehow the Chippewa people and my family are bound together in the story of this land. One way has already come to light. Geraldine Decoto, my colleague in Right Relationship Boulder, is an enrolled member of the Turtle Mountain Band of Chippewa Indians. She grew up on the Turtle Mountain Reservation in North Dakota. We had been working together for 6 years before we realized that some of her people had been removed from central Michigan so that my people could make farms there. Geraldine and I are related through the land. There is something awesome, terrible, and beautiful about acknowledging this as we work together now. My parents moved to Valparaiso, Indiana, and that's where I was born. Last year, I learned that the federal government purchased the land that became Valparaiso from the Potawatomi leader Chiqua. In 1838, a mounted militia drove Chiqua and 860 Potawatomi people out of northern Indiana across the Mississippi River to Kansas. The Potawatomi remember this as the Trail of Death. My family doesn't remember it at all. We didn't learn it in Valparaiso schools. I returned to Valparaiso as a college student to study at Valparaiso University. I didn't learn this history in my college courses either. But the land remembers, and through it, I am bound together with the Potawatomi people. Robin Wall Kimmerer is among them. My family moved to Colorado in 1957, and now I live in Louisville. According to the 1851 Treaty of Fort Laramie, this land belongs to the Hanana'e, the Arapaho people. But in 1859, when miners discovered gold in the Boulder foothills, the Arapaho were forced out of their camps in the Boulder Valley. Their peace chief, Nawath, was told to camp on the eastern plains at Sand Creek, and that's where the U.S. cavalry attacked them at dawn one November morning. 200 people, most of them women, children, and elders, were slaughtered in what became known as the Sand Creek Massacre. Reflecting on this history, the Pawnee attorney Walter Echohawk wrote, "The land can speak to those who listen. There is a bluff overlooking Sand Creek where you can hear women and children crying in the wind." Boulder was one of the training sites for volunteer cavalrymen, and more than 50 Boulder men helped carry out the Sand Creek Massacre. Afterward, the Arapaho survivors were forced out of Colorado to reservations in Wyoming and Oklahoma, and that's where most Arapaho people live today. I learned this local history along with a group of Native and non-Native people in Boulder who started studying it together a few years ago. We sought out the only Arapaho person we knew who lives in Boulder. Her name is Ava Hamilton. We told Ava we thought we'd like to invite some Arapaho people to come to Boulder to meet with us. Ava said, "Well, that wouldn't be the way to start. You need to go and meet with them, where they live now, in Oklahoma and Wyoming." So we raised some money to make the trips, and Ava helped us set up meetings with elders and government leaders in both communities, and she came with us. When we asked the Arapaho people how they remembered Boulder, every single person said, "Boulder, Boulder is home. Boulder is our home." Most of these people had never been to Boulder, but they remembered. "Our ancestors lived in Boulder," they said, "and they died in Boulder. Boulder is sacred ground to us, our homeland." When we asked how they would like to relate to the land and the people who live in Boulder today, they said they would like to have land in Boulder County, a private place, a reverent place where they can pray, where they can honor their ancestors, where they can give their children a sense of what their lives were like before, when the Arapaho people were free. They also told us They would like to educate the people of Boulder about their lives today, how they're struggling to maintain their language and celebrate their cultures, the challenges their young people face, the knowledge and stories of their elders. They want us to know they're still here. We told them Boulder has a celebration of Indigenous Peoples Day in October, and they said it would be a good time for them to come. They said they'd like their dancers to perform and their elders and leaders to give presentations about all aspects of their lives, their governments, their games, their language, their arts, their daily lives. And they said they'd like to meet with city government officials to talk about land, and with school administrators to talk about curricula, and with faith communities to get to know some Boulder area families face to face. So we carried this message back to our homes in Boulder County, and we got to work. We raised money to bring Arapaho delegations from Wyoming and Oklahoma to meet with us in June a year ago. During their 2 days with us here, city and county government officials took us out to see several large pieces of city and county open space that they thought might be appropriate land for private use by the Arapaho and other native peoples. One piece of land is the site of the fort where Boulder's volunteer soldiers mustered to carry out the Sand Creek Massacre. Another has stone circles that date back to 500 years BC. Native peoples have lived in the Boulder Valley a very long time. Chief Elvin Kenrick sang memorial songs, gave offerings, and said prayers at these sites. Later, we walked together along some creeks where the chokecherries were in bloom, the same chokecherries that Arapaho people had gathered here centuries ago. Then churches, including this congregation, UU's in Boulder, and Quakers and UCC's, provided a potluck dinner with elk stew, buffalo burgers, and chokecherry jam, as well as the typical Boulder vegan fare. And we relaxed in fellowship together over a shared meal. Before we knew it, it was October, and about 100 Arapaho people were here with us for Indigenous Peoples Day. Here's what it was like.
Looking forward to what's Indigenous Peoples Day going to look like? What do we want it to look like, and how do we make sure it's not just a day, that we are building a foundation for a relationship going forward? We started with the interfaith service, and after that we had the lunch that was served by Tokabe, and I think that was a wonderful icebreaker, everybody eating and together and in the same room. And then we had the grand entry with all of the tribal folks and the dignitaries. And then we had these wonderful, wonderful educational speeches.
We must create a new future together, something which is long overdue. Well, no one knows where this path will lead. We are committed to this journey with you.
This is resolution number 1190, and it is a resolution declaring the second Monday of each year to be Indigenous Peoples Day.
Despite the broken treaties and promises and the acts of genocide and exploitation and discrimination that have come before your people and that you have experienced, you still come to us and extend a hand of friendship and kindness.
And if you don't know the answers, you wait for your friends to say, hey, Brian, this is what we need, this is what we want. And you're patient.
It's just so amazing
to learn what Boulder is doing in establishing Indigenous Peoples Day.
I do want to assure you that the Boulder Valley School District is committed to ensuring that we tell an accurate story about the traditions, the culture, the current issues that are faced by the Arapaho and the history.
From here, I want to move to our Arapaho guest speakers. So, Mr. Seahair.
Because here in this area, where our ancestors left their moccasin prints on the earth, it's like a stamp.
So today marks a historic day for us, and something I'm so proud to be a part of, because now we are home, and we will continue to come back home time and time again.
I'm very grateful on this day that is being recognized by the Boulder County and all the people of this valley to make those changes necessary to recognize Indigenous Day.
People in Boulder, you're setting that standard. So I'm going to go home and tell everybody. I'm going to tell all those politicians that are coming to us wanting our vote. You need to follow the lead of these Colorado people.
Land that is being proposed to be set aside for the Arapaho people when they travel from the north to the south, or when from the south to the north.
So I just thank you guys for having that understanding and wanting to get to know us. I think that it's going to help you guys so you can continue to educate your future, your children, as to who we are.
That was, of course, followed by the exhibition dancing, which of course is always fun, and you've got everybody dancing. They get so excited when they talk about the hand games. So when we're talking to them, well, what kind of a setup do we need for the hand games? Do we need chairs? Language, I didn't go in where Teresa Hischase was doing the language program, but I understand that she had so many people in there, and it was sort of hard to break up for the next thing because they were all into it.
So when I say, Nana Hua Nisitja, Nisitja, Nana Hua Nisitja.
The youth gave the gifts to the Arapaho elders, and that was just a lovely gesture to tie the generations together, and also the Native youth from Boulder with the Native people from Northern and Southern Arapaho.
So the American Indian Youth Leadership Institute has been in Boulder for over 18 years.
The Q&A we did at the end was kind of based off of the success of a Q&A we did in June. To me, that's really where defenses melted away.
My point of view is I will be thankful and I will be grateful for whatever the land is given to the Arapahos for this function.
I'm blown away by two things. The generosity of the Arapaho people and the generosity of our volunteers. We probably had 50 people with little name tags on them. So, pretty amazing.
The land of the Boulder Valley is bringing together all the people who love this place. The city of Longmont has initiated a sister city relationship with the Northern Arapaho in Wyoming. Lafayette's City Council is designating some open space land east of here to acknowledge and honor the Indigenous peoples of the past and the present. The land is helping us uncover hidden connections, calling on us to know that we are bound together, related through the land. Now, when I walk along the creeks in my neighborhood or on trails in the foothills, I remember the people who walked those paths before me. And now I know some of their descendants face to face. There is pain in our shared history, and there is hope. This year, the Hinanae will be back again to celebrate Indigenous Peoples Day with us on October 13th. Together, let's love this land and listen to what it remembers.